Dallas, Tampa, Charlotte, Greensboro, Tokyo, Melbourne. I am your champion. Learn to like it.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
I am Space Monk.
I'm styling and profiling.
Kids stealing, wheeling, dealing. Limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun.
I have, and John can correct me if he thinks, but I have a fundamental difference of opinion of what these things are.
No, you know, you and I are on the same page.
Yeah, and
well,
I don't think...
we were up all night with these things.
Yeah.
Two nights in a row.
Two nights in a row. And I think, you know, it's what could they be? Now, there are several things. It's the fact that these things happened to us. This incident happened. So the rest of what you may have, I may think, is a hypothesis.
Right, exactly. We established the facts moments ago as far as the facts of what happened, you know.
Yeah, that's what happened, and people either believe it or they don't.
Right,
I don't care.
Right.
I'm not standing for the Bigfoot party. I don't care. I'm not standing for the alien or whatever.
Exactly.
So, but that's what happened. Take it or leave it.
Right. I'm trying to approach this like in the most logical way possible here.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying, Adam? Or,
yeah,
like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we need to, as crazy as it is, we need to apply some sort of, like, logic to this insane story. So we established that these are sort of the facts of what you guys experienced. That's what you're saying you experienced. So now what do you think, having had over a year now to sort of contemplate this, and, you know, what's your takeaway on what went down those two nights in Southern Oregon?
Well, I'll say mine, and then John will obviously say his.
Sure.
I mean, my take on it is well, first of all, as a starting point, I don't know. I can't be sure.
Right.
So anything else is conjecture. So hypothesis. Well, the first thing you might say is, well, it was a hallucination. But I don't think so. It was corroborated by three different people. We weren't under the influence of anything else.
Yeah.
The events we described, John and I described concurrently as they were happening to us. The feelings were very real. We even replicated it on a second night purely to see if that was the case, and it wasn't. So I don't think it was a hallucination. The next thing is, well, you know, then you come into the possibilities of quantum physics and what these things might be. Now, when I was a child, the idea of multiverses and different universes and different dimensions was almost akin to Nostradamus. These days, scientists talk about them quite openly. They talk about the fact that there are different dimensions, and there are worlds beyond us. It seems to me that these things seem to have some sort of technology that was far superior to us. I certainly don't think that they were after a peanut butter sandwich from a gifting bowl. That doesn't make logical sense at all.
Yeah.
They were real tangible things. So they were after something. But I don't think it was after food or anything else. I don't know what they were after, but something with superior technology wouldn't be going for a food bowl. It doesn't seem logical to me.
Now, let me jump in here, though, and ask you, you say technology, but part of me feels almost like this is some kind of a natural occurrence.
That might be another hypothesis, and I'm just breaking down a couple of things.
Sorry.
If it's a technologically superior thing, then I don't think something like a Bigfoot would possess it. I mean, the Bigfoots would be wandering around in a forest, banging a tree with a stick. They're not going to have interdimensional. Why would they bother again if they had interdimensional technology or whatever you want to call it? Why would they be hanging around in a forest? You don't know. I'm just speculating.
Right. And to make things even stranger, it's like entirely possible. We haven't even really sort of established this, and it needs to be said. You know, in the little graphic I made, you know, I called it the Soha Bigfoot Portal. It's like we don't have any based on what you guys experienced.
No.
The fact that you were there looking for Bigfoot is just circumstantial to the fact that this happened. There's no connection whatsoever, aside from the fact that you were in an area that is allegedly a Bigfoot habituation zone. And I guess the point I want to make is, like, these very well could have been, folks may laugh, but it's like, what are the odds? It's like, maybe these are two interdimensional Bigfoot researchers who you know, the Adam Davies and John Carlson of the other dimension, who were like, shit, there's someone else here doing research too. You know what I'm saying? So we don't know exactly the motivation or why these things were there. We'll never know that.
At least
we can only speculate right now.
I think you have to consider all possibilities.
Right.
So some of the hypotheses you might make are going to be more radical than others. Mm-hmm. But what I'm also trying to do is extrapolate what I think might be reasonable in the circumstances.
Yes.
So if I go with the assumption that these are extraterrestrial, interdimensional, whatever you call aliens, then they have superior technology to us because they're able to do something that we can't do. And technologically, we're like children to them, you know?
Yeah.
They're much more advanced than us. So their motivations are questionable. But you can't, I don't think I can say, reasonably that they would be looking for food on that basis if they had that sort of technology.
Right.
So their motivations must be something else, and I don't know what those might be, but they must be something else, and that's what I'm trying to seek to explore. There was certainly a malevolence about them. I mean, John is more theologically minded than me, I think it's fair to say, so he'll talk about those sort of things. But what I was then interested in is, when I consider that from my own point of view, the most likely hypothesis is that they are real, that they have some sort of agenda that involves people. I mean, I can't say that there wouldn't be a connection with other creatures around there because clearly they're in that place.
Yeah.
Then you sort of think, well, are there any other accounts? Now, I've had at least three other accounts from people who have described these sort of mist and glow and things like that in their area. I've been to one. I'm not going to name that person because I haven't got their permission. And I'm going to go to another one very soon where somebody has said that this thing has happened to them. And they didn't know what I've described tonight because I'm only talking about it publicly to you for the first time. You see what I mean?
That's right.
So I'm investigating all of that to see if you can pick up a pattern of behavior and motivation as to what these things might have.
Mm.
But the starting point is, I don't know. I'm working on hypotheses. Those hypotheses could well be wrong, but what I'm trying to do when I'm trying to make sense of this stuff is go through what the most logical extrapolation of the facts are and trying to understand their motivation. And I might never get to the bottom of it.
No.
I might never, because, you know, these things might be so far away from our knowledge that it might never be. And there is no proof. There is nothing I can measure and nothing I can show to other people objectively to analyze of what actually happened.
Right.
What I have got is a corroborative account, a very real and very unpleasant and harrowing experience, the worst experience of my life that happened to me at that time. But what I need to work on and what I am doing is trying to make sense of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been forced to talk about it because I've been that much pressure about it that eventually I've popped, you know.
Yeah.
And we wanted to discuss it because, you know, I mean, we're not disagreeing for the most part with Dr. Johnson, but he definitely has a different view of what these things were. But it's a little unfair because he went to bed and he was not all up all night with these things.
He wasn't. He wasn't there when this happened. And he's dismissed what we said.
Yes,
which is his right. But he's talked about the fact that they're guardians and all this lot. But that doesn't bear to me any relation to what I experienced and what John's personal experience was.
No.
Yeah.
No, well, you and I are on the same page. These things were.
Well, John, what do you think went down that night in those nights in Southern Oregon?
You know, I'm with Adam. I've been kind of obsessing over it and trying to make sense of it. It was a fairly traumatic experience. It really was. And as Adam said, I may be coming at it from a little bit more of a theological point of view. I was raised a very devout Catholic, and I was lapsed for much of my adult life. And it's kind of brought me back to my faith a little bit. Because
really?
In trying to discern what all this really meant, what I think it was, and in my studies, and I have really been doing a lot of reading and soul searching, and it's really been something that has been on my mind quite a bit, and I think they were demonic. And I know Dr. Johnson is very much against that point of view, because I think he feels that he's of the opinion that the Bigfoot, or as he likes to call them, the forest people that live in this area, are benevolent and that they are across the board benevolent, which I don't think I agree with. I'm on Adam's side with that, but maybe the ones in his area are. But I think maybe he thinks that by association, these things, you know, if we call them evil, then by association we might be calling his forest people evil. And we're not. I mean, we didn't get that sense, that palpable sense of dread and foreboding and evil that we did when these things showed up.
Yeah.
Than when Adam and I both feel pretty strongly that there was some Bigfoot on the perimeter of the site, those first, you know, the third, fourth, and fifth, or second, third, and fourth night. But these things, I think, may have been demonic entities. I don't know beyond that specifically what they were, but I certainly don't think they were anything that were on our side.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, they were on our side because they blew went for us.
No, they charged us at that point, and they were heading right at us.
What?
They were running up the road, and Adam said, they're charging at us. And I'm like, okay, you know, again, it was one of those things that was on the edge of my lips. I'm like, yeah, they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And they started to pick up speed, and then they were, like, almost in front of us, and we hit them, and they disappeared. So they definitely were not anything that were good, and I think they were demonic. And another interesting thing is they were moving within this reddish-orange glow that we saw. And in some of my studies on demonology, I came across an interesting quote by St. Thomas Aquinas, and it said, and he's quoted and used quite a bit in the study of demonology and exorcism. It says, they carry the fire of hell with them. And that's a quote by St. Thomas. And like these things were, you know, this orangey glow went with them as they moved. And like, you know, I think these things were demonic.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion.
Well, mine
is, you know, I don't know when I want to investigate.
I don't
further.
Know either.
Right, right. Yeah. Obviously, yeah, you're sharing your opinion.
Just conjecture on my part. I don't
know. Yeah, I mean, these are all hypotheses, because we don't know. Absolutely. And I think it's okay to say I don't know. I think it's okay to say
absolutely.
We don't deal
I
with
don't know.
Certainties. We don't
I,
know.
I will say that first and foremost, I don't know. This is all just conjecture.
So we tried to make sense of what happened, and it's very difficult to make sense. So your question from a qualitative sense is, where do we take this story? Well, we take this story by doing further research. You know, and there are precedents, with the ones I'm investigating, but also many of your listeners will be familiar with the Bigelow Ranch, with the Skinwalker Ranch that's
right,
investigated
right.
by Bigelow, who's obviously the head of NASA. And they had some really good scientists investigating all the stuff that went on down there. You know, and I heard one of the colonels talking about it on a video, and you know, they researched it for a long time, and at the end of it, he was like, well, some weird stuff happened, you know, there were various accounts which you're familiar with. But at the end of the day, well, you know, he said, well, where does this take you? What did you learn? And he sort of said, well, I don't know. I don't know what it is, and I just, you know, in the same way as we're starting to understand the concept of multiverses and quantum physics, we are at the beginning probably of our understanding of a lot of this information, you know, as I said, to even, if you were a physicist 20 years ago and you mentioned the notion of multiverses, you would have been seen as a heretic, yeah. You know, in the same way as Galileo was. When he proposed that the Earth was not in fact the center of the solar system, it was the sun. Yeah, these sort of concepts. And one of the things I was conscious of was that I wasn't sure, without getting other evidence, that people were ready for this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure that I wanted to be the person to first put forward this information, frankly.
Right,
I didn't need the shit. I didn't need the shit, Tim. I wanted to do other stuff.
No,
well,
that's...
See these things.
I got a lot to say, so...
Well, you know,
I have a lot of questions and I have a lot of things. So hold on now. Let me wrangle you two, because you're clearly taken with this whole thing. So first... I'm interested, John. You said you tried to rebuke these things. Well, A, don't answer yet. A, the reaction, what was the reaction when you tried to rebuke these entities? And then B, if you don't mind, I hate to get too personal, but talk a little bit about your return to the church, because I feel like there's a lot, this is, you're not the first person that's had this, this scenario unfold, where they have sort of a paranormal experience and then return or sort of become religious. So I think there's something to that, that maybe you personally should explore more. I don't mean just like right now telling me about it, but I mean beyond this show. Like, I would look more into that and find out more about that sort of thing that happens to a lot of folks. So tell me about the rebuking and then tell me about your return to the church.
Well, I had seen a video or two. I work for myself. I work at home. I listen to a lot of YouTube video lectures when I get bored of listening to my music. So, I'd heard a couple of that saying that was said that as far as alien abductions, you can, they're often turned back by invoking the name of Jesus Christ. So basically, if you say, you know,
right, I've heard that.
You're rebuked. I rebuke you in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. So I was like, let's try that, because may be demonic. I mean, that came to mind immediately. I mean, they were, looked it, looked the part. So when they rushed us, I called that out, and we both turned the flashlights on them. I don't know if one or the other or both is what turned them away.
Okay, so
but
you can't
each
really.
Each time we did that, we both did. You know, Adam did it too. We were like, we cast you out or we rebuke you.
Exactly. There's no atheists in a foxhole, Adam, right?
I would have tried anything.
Yeah.
believe me.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can't be sure. We have no sort of control or litmus test of the rebuking and what that reaction was. Okay,
that's
fair enough.
Did it or not.
Okay.
I began studying demonology. I've read a number of books at this point, and, you know, a lot of what I've read seems to fit this. And I don't know. One of the things I brought up, Adam just mentioned the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah. When I was there, I mentioned that to him and to Matt Johnson. I said, you know, this place kind of reminds me. I read this book called The Hunt for the Skinwalker.
Yeah, George Knapp, Home Color.
Yes, great book. I've read it several times over. And the book I thought was fascinating because there's so many different types of paranormal phenomena that show up at the same place. And I've always kind of had this gut instinct that a lot of it, as much as people in the field want to compartmentalize all this, they like to say that, you know, UFOs are this, and Bigfoot is that, and this, and ghosts are this, and they have nothing to do with that, and this and that. I've always felt that there is a connection, and as I'm reading a lot of this stuff, it seems like the thread that binds them together is that they are demonic, and you know, I've always been very resistant to that idea because I've listened to other lectures and read other authors that say, "Oh, it's all demonic," and I've tended to say, "Well, oh, you know, typical religious guy. They think that everything is God and the devil." But I'm starting to come around to that a bit. And
my only concern with that take on it is just that you're attaching like sort of this baggage, this long history and sort of like this sort of this narrative to these entities. I personally, I would just say they appeared malevolent. You can't, I mean, I
certainly did,
because demonic to me carries, like I said, carries with it all this religious baggage that, as far as we know, based on what happened, we don't know any indication that there's any sort of religious aspect to it. But that's a whole, you know what I mean? That's kind of like something where it's in the eye of the beholder, let's say.
It is. And
you
my
know what
mind
I mean?
Is open, and I'm not married to that idea, but I'm much more open to it than I once was.
Right, right. And also, in a sense, it's like, to say they're demonic is, you're just sort of, You know, you're just answering a mystery with a mystery, in a sense, because we don't know shit about demons either, really. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously people have researched them and stuff, but... but you know what I mean. It's like, we don't know. We know about as much about demons as we do about the Bigfoot, let's say, because, like, we can't... We don't have a demon in a jar somewhere, and, you know what I'm saying? So it's like... We're just answering one mystery with another mystery, but I see your point of view on it.
All this stuff is conjecture, honestly.
Absolutely.
And I'm not, you know, if anybody says, no, I don't agree, I'm not going to fight you, because I don't know. All I can do is guess, but Adam and I are both very positive that those things that came out of that glowing, misty area, I could say portal, but that thing that came out, they were not friendly. They were not good. They were up to no good.
Okay.
And I don't know what would have happened. And, you know, the frightening thing, too, which we've talked about, Adam and I, is that we were asleep the first two nights. We went to bed earlier. Who's to say they didn't show up after, you know, after we went to bed those first two nights? And
right.
I don't know. Could have anally probed us or something.
Oh, boy.
Adam.
Oh, no.
No, that was Adam.
Warn us the next day.
edit that out.
There you go. I will. let me say this, though. Of course, I'm sure there's, given what you said about the sort of polarizing nature of all this and the area and Dr. Matthew Johnson's work and stuff, is, I guess, answer the obvious retort that would come from someone who's skeptical, where it's like, this, could you have been the victim of a hoax? Could this be something that he has orchestrated at his location where he brings you guys up there? I mean, you said he goes to bed. It's like, I mean, that makes it sort of suspicious to me in a sense, and I'm not casting aspersions on him. I'm just looking at this as a completely independent third-party observer, where it's like you got two people who see something crazy in this dude's area. The dude whose area is not around. He goes to bed. Like, did he go to bed? Could you look over and see him in bed, or was he, like, so clear out of shot that you have no idea where he went?
No, we could. No, I mean, that's a very good question, because a lot of people who are skeptical would say he propounded a hoax on us.
Exactly.
I think that is absolutely right. No, I don't think that was the case. Now, there are a number of reasons. First of all, he would have had to have had a budget on the level of Spielberg to pull this shit off. All of the things that happened, he couldn't. We could physically see where he was and the fact that he was asleep. It's not like he suddenly disappeared and then these things appeared.
Okay.
He was asleep in the corner. We could see where he was.
Okay, so he wasn't like off somewhere. He couldn't have been off somewhere pulling controls and shit.
It wasn't like some puppet show and suddenly, you know, he went behind a curtain.
Yeah. He's like in his truck on his iPad making all this shit happen.
Yeah.
That's not possible. Okay.
I said, hey, Matt, where'd you get those midgets that came out of the woods? We all joked about it because, I mean, it was very much not a hoax.
That will be a question that, you know, you would explore, and we've explored at length, because you have to rule out all possibilities.
Exactly.
I really don't think so. My way forward is to try and find, examples of this in other areas, if I possibly can.
Yeah.
But people are very reluctant to talk about this stuff because they don't want all the shit that's associated with
it. I can imagine,
Why would you bring this on yourself? You know, there's no merit or benefit for it. It's not the sort of, you know, as I say, it's not what I wanted to see. It's not the sort of attention I want. It's not, you know, but I am, because it's happened to me and it's happened to John and, you know, I want to try and understand it, and I think that's, you know, it's one of those things. I think it's fair to say that there's not even a couple of hours that go by where I don't play back that incident where they attacked it in my head.
Yeah.
I do. I don't. I think it would be well beyond the resources of Matthew Johnson. Matthew Johnson is a rich man. I don't think he could have in a million years have fabricated it. He almost has a theological belief himself around what Sower is. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in trying to find out what can be measured and extrapolated from what happened to us. So I'm trying to strip that away in the way I move forward with it.
Okay. I'm trying to think of what else we should cover here on this story, because I feel like I've hit you with every shot that you could get from people, you know, who may be skeptical about this. I've kind of put you through the ringer, and I, you know, it's the only fair way to do this, because I personally, like I said, I mean, at the end of the day, we're left with an anecdote that doesn't tell us anything really about Bigfoot at all. Like I said, I put on the graphic Bigfoot portal, but clearly these are two, you know, aside from the happenstance of the situation, there's no indication that there's any connection here between the two, aside from the happenstance of it.
Right.
So, to me, it's like, I like where Adam's going with this, because that's the only thing you can do, I guess, is to find out more about these portal situations. Adam, I gotta wonder, though, at times, you know, if I were you, I'd be like, fuck this shit, man. I'm just going back to Sumatra. I'm going to get the Orang Pendek. I can't deal with, because, I mean, between the Lori Simmons insanity, with the Bigfoot living under the tree and all that, with Dr. Sykes and now this, it's like, dude, you really, I don't know what it is, man. I don't know. If I were you, I think I'd be both really intrigued because some crazy stuff has happened, like, to you twice now. So I can see why you want to keep going. But there's another part of me that's like, you've really taken a lot of slings and arrows here from the Bigfoot community ever since you got into this, because a lot of weird shit seems to be happening just to you. So, I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, I think in those circumstances that's the case. I mean, you know, next time we speak, I'll talk more about what I did in Canada this year, which is more along the lines of your normal Bigfoot stories, where I went out with the First Nation Indians and had an amazing time doing all of that. And I'm doing a lot of research on that at the moment. So this year, nothing of that ilk has happened to me. And when I've been to other areas, nothing like that has happened since. Yeah, so I've been to other areas. I went, for example, straight after that, I went to the Sierras, and I was kind of a bit worried just in case something did happen, because I was in, you know, with Nadia, in a very remote area, with much more remote than Oregon. And I was like, shit, if these things turn up here, I'm going to be pissed. Like, you know, but nothing happened there. Nothing of any nature like that happened at all when I was in the Sierras. When I was in Canada, I was all over the place in some very remote areas, and I had nothing like that happened there. In all the research I've done this year, I've done some amazing stuff, which I'm dying to tell you about another time, but nothing like that has happened to me since. So, yes, it's a good point, but I don't feel like every time I go out, some weird, mega weird shit's going to happen to me, because since then, it's not. This is a one-off thing.
Right, right.
Hopefully. Then, you know what, I'd rather not have a repeat of that.
No.
Myself.
And I think, like, you know, at the end of the day, I'm interested in sort of getting the Bigfoot, you know what I mean? So to me, it's like, I love the story, it's a crazy story, and it's the kind of thing I love, and I'm sure, like, you know, it's really pretty wild, and it's fun to listen to, but it's like, at the end of the day, it doesn't get me or anyone else any closer to getting the Bigfoot. So it's like,
no, it doesn't, and that's why I've moved on to other stuff since.
Right, right.
Yeah. And that was what I was quite happily doing until this stuff was like pressed on me.
Yeah, your hand was kind of forced to get into all this.
It wasn't what I wanted to talk about. As I said to you, I didn't want to talk about the extraterrestrial alien or whatever you want to call it. Show was not something I signed up for. I'm purely interested in doing the Bigfoot research, and I was not a big, you know, I've never done paranormal stuff, as you know. I'm not,
right.
I mean, it's not that I'm an anti it. I, you know, if somebody tells me a ghost story, I'll sit around the campfire with the best of them, but it's not my bag, Tim. It's not my thing. So I've moved on and done some really great stuff, some stuff I'm actually really excited about. Got some really unique evidence of things moving forward in Canada. So I feel like mentally, I can live with this and put it behind me a bit. It's not that I'm, but by the same token, I'll keep investigating it. There's something I want to investigate very soon in connection with it, but it's not in Oregon.
Yeah. Now, I made the point when we were talking before the show started, I was all fired up about something related to something going on in my life unrelated to all this, so I was kind of like in a bit of a tizzy. But, you know, with all due respect to Matthew Johnson, this does not apply to him specifically. This applies to the overall trend of Bigfoot habituation. I've kind of thrown my hands up at this point on these habituation stories, you know, because to me it's like, you know, we talk, again, with all due respect to Matthew Johnson, with all due respect to Lori Simmons, who was on the program last year and has a habituation account. It's like, listen, at the end of the day, we want to get the Bigfoot, Okay? Yeah. Get being, you know, insert your own definition, folks. Prove it's real, capture it, kill it. There's a whole debate about that beyond, beyond this program. The point I'm trying to make, though, is if you say you've been living with Bigfoot, or if you say you have sort of a congenial relationship with Bigfoot in a certain area, if you cannot produce some kind of good proof, then I don't know what to say. I don't really have any use for what your account or your story is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? And that's, again, this goes to all the habituation folks, because what good is it, dude? What good does it do anybody if I say there's a Bigfoot in my backyard, we're copacetic, you know, we've been that way for 3 years. It's like, well, you're not helping anybody, man. You're not, and I'm talking about, I mean, people can bring out these sound recordings and plaster casts and stuff like that, but listen, dude, I said to you guys before the show started, these sound recordings are on the level of EVPs at this point. They're worthless to me because we don't have, we've got a million of them. They're the same as UFO reports, okay? At some point, you reach critical mass of evidence where you're like, I have 1,000 Bigfoot sounds. It's done. It's not moving the needle anymore, is what I'm saying.
Let me answer it and talk about it a little
bit. Yeah, that's my rant there, so go.
Do you feel better now? Do you feel better?
A little bit.
Well, let me answer. Okay, so let's talk about habituation generally. So if you talk about habituation with animals, for example, Jane Goodall is the classic example that a lot of people who associate with habituation talk about. When she used to do something that she called provisioning, which is leaving out gifts for chimps. But that, from the best of my knowledge, used to take up to five or six months, I think, before they would take them and they would have this direct face-to-face contact. With, even if she stopped that now, I think, but even with even without provisioning, she can make contact effectively, or they can make contact effectively with, groups of chimps.
Right.
I think it takes up to 5 or 6 years. But when that does happen, the photographs are very clear. They're indisputable. Yeah. The chimps are with them. Now, some habituators who are connected with Bigfoot, you know, I don't want to diss them. Some of them are very genuine people who believe wholeheartedly in what they do. And some of them would say, well, that's not my motivation. I don't care about getting scientific proof, Tim, Adam, John, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm interested in just the interaction with them. Well, that's fine, but then if you do share your stories, you should be prepared to hear from people who will say, well, where's the proof?
Right.
By the same token, what I'm about, and I've always been very clear, is I'm interested in getting the scientific evidence. So I'm not interested myself in building up a relationship. The only thing and good luck to them if that's the methodology. The only thing I don't like is if people say that the reason that you're not connecting with them is because you're not special like them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a load of bullshit. I can't see why you would be special and chosen by the Bigfoot. That's a load of hokey. You can say, look, I'm a habituator. I haven't got the evidence yet. So if you were with, like, Brian Sykes, Laurie Simmons, you say, well, you know, I am trying. This is the method that I've found that works for me, and I am trying to get that DNA evidence. I am trying to get that hair evidence. I just haven't got it yet, but I'll keep on going. Then I'm cool with that. That's totally fine. You're fine. But please don't turn around to me and say, well, I'm special and you're not.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, to speak to the Jane Goodall thing in a way, it's like, now I don't know I barely know the facts about Jane Goodall, so I apologize for this, but there's gotta be, I have to be right in a sense about this. Like you were saying how the pictures were clear, it's like there's a reason why Jane Goodall is like a household name to anyone who has an understanding of science, and that's because she could prove that she habituated with these things. That's the point. It's like, you can't just say you habituate with, you know, there's a reason why these Bigfoot habituators aren't household names, because they can't prove that they're really doing it. So, I think a lot of them rely on the crutch of Jane Goodall. They're like, well, Jane Goodall, but it's like, at some point you have to take the next step to, you know, you have, I understand what you're saying, their motivation is different, And I respect that. If you're not down with taking that next step, I get it. But to me, I don't. I only want to talk to the people who will take the next step.
Well, for me, it's about the next step. I'm interested in the scientific evidence. Yeah, but you see, the difference is if you are propounding a theory around it, you're not. It's not an independent objective research. You become an advocate.
Hmm.
So you're advocating your belief system.
Right.
With doing that sort of habituation. And that's fine if that's what you want to do, but it's not what you would call objective scientific evidence, yeah? It's that approach. And that, you know, for example, if I get a hair sample and I want to send it off for analysis, what I'll do is I'll say where it's from, I'll say the time and date I got it, but I'll also say the number of animal species that are in the area which it may also be, particularly if I'd observed them or observed tracks or evidence of them, yeah? What I won't do is say, you know what, this must be a Bigfoot.
Right.
Yeah, because I'm an advocate then. I'm not a researcher.
Right.
John, anything to say about my ranting and all this stuff about habituation and the challenge of proving this thing?
No, you know, I am an outsider to all of this. As I said, I have a blog mostly about the paranormal. I have one article on there about Bigfoot based on an experience my wife had out in northwestern New Jersey, and her and a bunch of the other teachers and students. But, you know, I really prefer to stay an outsider to this this group, because they're very
they're passionate.
Passionate, that's a nice way to say it.
Yeah.
They're pretty they can be pretty contentious and backbiting, but the Bigfoot the habituation method made a lot of sense to me, as Matt Johnson explained it to me. I understand if they are very elusive, if they're shy, if they're highly intelligent, they're, you know, running through the woods with the infrared cameras may not be the best way to do it. If you think that they are in a specific area, the idea of kind of setting up camp and going back to that area on a regular basis and getting them used to your presence, it made sense to me. But I don't know what's really the best way to do it.
Right. And, well, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No.
Right. I just, like I said earlier, like I said moments ago, it's like, but to me, I like the habituation method. I think it's a good technique. I think it could be very promising, and I think it should probably prove fruitful in the future. But you have to take that next step. If you've established a relationship with a Bigfoot over the course of years, then you should be able to get a clear picture. That's just common fucking sense, man.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's all about evidence. You have to have solid, concrete evidence, and if people say I don't believe you because you don't have solid evidence, then it's understandable. And at this point, you gotta have a body. Nothing short of a live or dead body.
Right, right. I didn't even want to get into that.
Or
yeah.
Photographs are gonna be dismissed.
Yeah.
So you're gonna have one in a cage or on a slab. Unfortunately.
You're fading out on me there, dude. What are you?
Yeah.
What are you on?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
You have to have one, you know, either in a cage or dead, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, short of that, it's not going to be taken seriously.
See, for me, I'm persuaded by the fact that you can still get DNA evidence. So
or
I
DNA,
think hair evidence would be enough to tip the balance myself.
Hmm.
Because from the mitochondrial DNA, you should be able to write a paper on the existence of that.
Yeah.
But I take your point. I think the bottom line with what I'd say about habituation is some of these people are very, very nice. And I like some of them.
Mm-hmm.
The methodology, if you don't want to find what, you're not interested in scientific evidence and you just want to enjoy yourself, then all well and good. But if you say that you are after that, then you need to put up or shut up.
Yeah.
And if people question your approach, then what you can't do is get very aggressive if they do so. You have to be prepared to justify your position. And I'm cool with all of that, and there are pros and cons to that. As I say, the only thing I don't like is when people say that they're special and you're not. Because I think that that's bullshit.
Yeah. My mom's been saying I'm special for years, so I don't need to hear it from anyone else.
Special boy. You're her special boy, Tim.
That's right, Adam. That's right.
You are a special little cuddly boy.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, I'm passionate about this whole thing with the habituation, but I don't know any of these people personally. I don't have anything personally against them. I don't, you know, it's not like I think that they're bad people. I'm just saying, as far as technique goes, it has merit. It seems promising. But you got to bring something new to the table at this point because we've seen it all before, and it's like, that's it, man. I mean, that's kind of my take on it. It's like, if I could establish a relationship with the Bigfoot, like these various situations, I probably wouldn't do this, but there's a part of me that's like, yeah, you know, you befriend him, you kind of like establish that relationship, you know, don't get too close, and then after a year or two, it's just you come out there and boom, shotgun. You know?
Well, I would never shoot one. You know?
I know. I probably couldn't either because you'd probably eventually look at them as like a pet or a friend.
Never, no,
but
I would never be able to do that.
There's a part of me that's like, you gotta be cold and calculating in this kind of situation if possible. But I mean, I don't even know. It's this whole Bigfoot thing. It's getting weirder and weirder all the time,
man.
It is.
And you know, it's interesting to me, and Adam knows more about this than I do, but there's a lot of these kind of paranormal stories associated with business with Bigfoot that I think gets swept under the rug.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially like in the UFO community.
Yeah. And you know, the people who are very tied to the idea that they're some sort of physical beings or that they are, you know, some relic hominid don't want to hear that stuff. And Adam, I don't want to speak out of turn. I'm not going to mention any names, but Adam said he talked to somebody that is a major Bigfoot researcher and had a UFO sighting associated with a Bigfoot sighting.
Yeah, there's like a whole book by Stan Gordon talking about Bigfoot UFO connection from the Pennsylvania wave. So, yeah.
And this guy was like, I'm not going to talk about this because it will ruin my reputation in the field. So it's, you know, there's a lot of this, and I'm not saying that they're necessarily magical or interdimensional, but man, there seems to be more to the whole thing than we might be guessing at.
Right. Well, I had a guest on. I can't rule this out now, so I this is, again, with all due respect to you guys. I had a guest on a couple of episodes ago, Eric Wallett, talking about the parapsychological effects. So I you know, he was saying there are instances, or he thinks there's instances, where that multiple people see the same thing, but it's still a project. It's still somehow a parapsychological phenomenon. So, I mean, we honestly can't rule that out necessarily. Just because you three guys saw the same thing doesn't mean it wasn't some shared psychic experience, in a sense.
True. Yeah, so. And I think that argument would have been more plausible had it just happened on the one night. But the fact is it happened on the second night as well.
Okay.
And it was replicated. So if it was just one continual event, it started, it had a finish, and that was it, then I would have been more inclined towards that and said yes. But the fact is it happened a second time.
Yeah.
Yeah, on a second night.
Okay.
And that was persuasive for me.
Okay.
Two and a half hours. It was from 2:30 a.m. again the second night, also around 2:30 it started, till dawn. It shut down when the sun started to rise.
Right.
So it was like 2:30 to 5 both nights. It wasn't like a fleeting glimpse of something.
Yeah, it was very specific, and we had to fight it off. I mean, there's no question.
Yeah.
We had to actually directly interact with it in order for you know, it wasn't something that was directly responding to us. But anyway.
I know, but part of me also, though, Adam, I gotta say, you, I understand this was really traumatic, so I don't want to be a dick. But it's, you're saying you had to like fight it off, and that your life was in danger, but you're also saying that if you shined a flashlight at it, it disappeared. So, I mean, what was the, how could, that doesn't sound very terrifying to me.
Well, it was, because the things attacked us. You mean, what you've got is, you've got something you've never seen before, beyond your contemplation, showing anger on its face, rushing at you. You know, that, imagine, Tim, imagine you're stood there, and something you've never seen, these creature things, they start charging you.
Yeah.
That is beyond contemplation for most people, beyond comprehension. It is very traumatic, that sort of event. And there's no question about that. And it was. So somebody might say that, but, you know, that was my personal experience of the event, and that was John's.
Okay.
So what I can say with absolute certainty is, yes, it was. And you know, it did feel like a battle. Now, people may well say, well, I don't believe that, whatever.
Sure.
I'm not interested in the opinion of those people who may say that. I accept that they may. But
sure.
What I'm interested in doing is, I know that these events are real. What I'm interested in doing is seeking to understand them. It was hugely intense, that incident.
Okay.
It was, I would use the word traumatic.
It sounds like you guys really, you know, I feel bad sort of hitting you with these tougher questions,
no.
But it's like, this is the only, you know, this is what people have been waiting for, and I'm sure they've pondered all this stuff for a while too, so it stands to a reason. I just wish you had gotten more, you know, something more out of it that we could put our hands around. You know what I mean? But hindsight being 20/20.
That's as far as you can take it this time. I mean, it stands as a unique account that's corroborated, that happened on a number of events. So it's an interesting, it's definitely an interesting account.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's not proof of anything. And it was certainly extremely unpleasant. But, you know, further research needs to happen. If you can get anywhere, I'm not sure I can. And you know, I think most of it's I don't knows, other than the fact that it happened.
Yeah.
Interesting story, if I can add. When we were there, I think I had mentioned that I brought up the Skinwalker Ranch to Adam and Matt, and they hadn't heard of it at the time. I've read that book several times over again, Hunt for the Skinwalker, George Knapp and Colm Kelleher. And after we were there, and I said, you know, I think this place is maybe a little bit, if maybe to a lesser degree, a bit like the Skinwalker Ranch, the SOA, Southern Oregon habituation area where Matt took us. And, there was a, he said he had seen some subsequent portal openings, if we want to call it a portal. Using that word, but I can't attest to that. I was not there, but he said at one point he saw a Bigfoot crawl out of one of these or come through one of these portals. And there's a story very similar to that. I'm sure you know if you read the book that the scientists there that went to research the area saw the same thing. And I said, you know, there may be some sort of connection. I don't know if it's the area that is, you know, the Irish has a term, I think it's called a place where the world is thin.
Yeah.
Where there's kind of, you know, this interdimensional activity. But they describe something very similar to, now I don't know if Matt had read the book and said that, and I don't think he's a liar. I'm not accusing him of being a liar. I think Matt's honest. But he described something. I said, you know, that was in that book. And I said, have you read it yet? And he said, no, I haven't. So, you know, there's a very similar story of a Sasquatch-looking type creature coming through a portal at that Skinwalker Ranch. So I thought that was an interesting parallel.
There's definitely something weird going on, that's for sure. All right. Well, we've gone 2 hours here. I feel like I'm wondering if there's more to explore about all this. I'm sure there'll be people who are like, he didn't ask X, Y, and Z, but I've pretty much, you know.
Yeah, I think we're done on it. I'm
as far as I can take it.
Now with that. Yeah.
John, do you have anything else? No, I don't want Adam, stick around because I want you to give me an update on the Dr. Sykes stuff. John, you're more than welcome to stick around if you'd like.
Yeah.
So
I'll sit here and listen and keep my mouth shut.
Yeah, because it's like 6:30, so I don't know what, you know, who knows what you have going on. But
I don't know how long you typically run your shows for, but
we just go
till we're not more than 10 minutes.
Yeah,
before we
yeah, we won't spend too much longer.
Okay.
So Adam, let me catch folks up to speed. Last time Adam was on the show was last October. And at that time, he had a different revelation for us. I can't wait till the next time you're on the show, Adam. I don't even want
to. No, I'm storing up. I'm giving you a hint of what I was up to. But
yeah. So Adam revealed to us that he had been on a secret expedition with Dr. Sykes and Laurie Simmons, and intimated that this was going to be revealed in further detail from Dr. Sykes' perspective in his forthcoming book, which subsequently came out this past April. And I had wishful thinking when talking to Adam last October that given this sort of sensational nature of the British press and that Dr. Sykes was British, that maybe if he recounted the story as crazy as it sounded with Adam in October, that it should have generated some headlines, and it didn't, and we didn't really, you know, it didn't really, set the world on fire, let's say, via the book. So I guess what happened, Adam? Well, first of all, I haven't read the book, so I can't speak to that. So what did he say in the book about what you told us as far as the expedition goes? And what was the reaction to all that?
Well, I mean, he basically talks about what happened. He talks about the expedition I did with Laurie and himself. You know, I mean, he didn't mention that he paid for that expedition, which I think he should have done, really. The reason he mentioned that he paid for it was because he was persuaded on a visit he'd had with Laurie and Professor Redmond Mullins by the evidence that he'd seen in Laurie's area. So he conducted that, and he got the first ever scientific permit to do Bigfoot research. Legitimately, that's what he told me. You know, I think it goes, in some ways, it's tangential with this. He writes in his book, yes, at the time I was convinced that Laurie had a relationship with the Bigfoot, and but then I felt like I was losing my objectivity because he postulates, well, could it have been the tree in the wind, the tree knocking? And I think what he did was step back from actually saying in his book that it was a Bigfoot. I wish, you know, from my own point of view, I think it was generally a good book, but I wish he'd had the courage of his convictions to actually, he recounts the events, but he steps back from saying, yeah, it was a Bigfoot. He said, well, you know, maybe it was just a tree knocking, but clearly a tree would not have taken food or grunted or done any of the other things. And I think that, you know, this is my view on it. I think that's because he didn't have the DNA, he didn't have the evidence in order to make that big leap for him to make, you know, in the scientific world. So if he'd said that, he probably would have been able to ridicule, and I think that would have been very hard for him to do. So in his book, he recounts the events. He doesn't go into the same level of detail, but he certainly does recount them and recounts what happens, but he postulates that it could have been something else. But he still leaves himself open to potential further Bigfoot research. And I think that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. Is he still pursuing this line of sort of cryptid DNA research, or has he moved on to something else now?
Well, not at the moment, but it's not that he wouldn't be open to something if he thought it was substantive. I think is the best way to do it, way to say it. But you'd have to really go for it. I don't think he'd fund research himself out of his own money like he did with myself and Laurie at the time. But I think he still would be interested in it if it was something that was very persuasive.
Yeah.
So the elusive DNA is still pending. But you have seen more scientists working on this and doing this, as I mentioned in the last thing, last show we did over the last few years, which is usually encouraging. So I'm glad about that.
Right, right. What's been, John? I'm glad you stuck around because I just want to circle back to the story here. You know, Matthew Johnson, he revealed all this like in April, and you guys have been, you know, like we said, John, you've posted a few things on Facebook and,
yeah, with Adam's permission.
Yeah, and there's been a few little sort of snippets of stuff, from you guys out there on this, but I guess I know there's been sort of a fevered interest in you guys talking about this, but yeah. I guess with regards to the whole story and everything, what's been the reaction of the Bigfoot community? I'm sure it's been very divisive and controversial, but you know, what's been the reaction like to this really crazy story?
Well, I haven't talked about it at all anywhere till tonight, because I didn't want to be coerced into talking about it to anybody else's agenda.
Right.
But because I constantly get asked about it all the time, it's not gone away. And I think that, you know, the research it needs, really, is this whole phenomenon. We are, like, I think we are at the beginning of our understanding of it. And I can't see what merit it would be in having loads of random people and/or children in that sort of area. I think that, you know, if this phenomenon exists and it is genuine, then it needs careful scientific research. I don't think it needs speculation on Facebook. I think it needs people to go away and carefully study it.
Right.
But yeah, it's been a massive story. I think the correct way to go about it is to explore hypotheses and take that forward and look for parallels and other things that where it may occur. But the problem is if you have this sort of pizzazz, for want of a better word, around it, it puts people off from talking about these things.
Yeah.
Because they don't want the shit. They don't want the shit from from people who may disagree with them. They don't want the shit on Facebook. They don't want the shit from Bigfoot community as a whole. They, you know, why would you take all this? I didn't want all this crap.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm used to being in the public eye. So if you're a normal person going about the business and not having been used to all of this, then why would they take this on board on their shoulders?
There's
no benefit to them. So this tub thumping I don't think it's constructive.
Yeah. I think Adam has more to lose by all this than I do.
Absolutely.
Honestly, I have no standing in this field. I've had a number of kind of strange experiences throughout my life, what you might call paranormal experiences when I was younger, early childhood, and then again in my teens, and then again nothing until last June out in Southern Oregon. But because of that, I've always had an interest in this sort of thing, and my mother was kind of psychically gifted, which is another contributing factor to my interest in the supernatural and unknown. But I had no specific interest in Bigfoot other than, you know, kind of a general interest. And, you know, I frankly don't really care. You know, most of my friends are not going to hear about this unless they're into this sort of thing.
And right.
That's almost nobody that I know and I'm not going to go post it on my general Facebook page because.
Yeah.
I don't think I really want people to know about this, this kind of thing, this aspect of my life. But, you know, it's been very strange, and I sort of want to talk about it, but I understand that there's very few people I can talk about it. I mean, outside of my wife listens to me, and she believes me, which means a lot to me, because if she looked at me like I had two heads, it really would have been difficult. But
yeah.
At least I have her, and I have Adam, and outside of that, because Adam went through it with me. But outside of that, I don't have anybody to talk about it with, and I find myself wanting to talk about it. I want to unload.
Yeah.
And the only one who has the shared experience that can really understand it is Adam. We have each other on this, but you know, it happened. It happened. It really honestly happened. It wasn't a hoax. It wasn't. I mean, Johnson would have had to have the crew of Industrial Light and Magic hiding in the woods somewhere on that ridge to have pulled this off. It wasn't a hoax.
Right.
It wasn't a hoax. It happened. All three of us saw it. You know, Adam and I were up all night dealing with it. It really happened, and that means something. And it's unfortunate that because it's understandable, but unfortunate that it's such an outrageous story. It's so outlandish, and we have no concrete proof that it happened. It's just anecdotal. People are going to dismiss it. And people are going to dismiss it because they don't like Matt Johnson. There's a lot of people just going to do that because they don't like him personally. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah, that's counterproductive to trying to get to the bottom of this.
It is.
So you got to check your feelings at the door about people.
Yes.
You know?
It's real. It happened. And that's significant. It means something. What it means, I'm not quite sure. But it means... It means something.
Yeah.
Because it really, really happened. And just to circle back to what you said a little while ago, I wrote an article about almost 4 years before I went to SOA last year.
Yeah.
About these repeated visitations that I sort of buried them as being dreams, but I don't think that they were. But
about short, squat, black entities that used to visit me at my bedside. You know, and it's very easy to say, oh, well, those were night terrors, and my mother used to say, well, we just moved to this new house in Massachusetts, and...
Where in Massachusetts?
Wellesley.
Oh, nice.
In Wellesley, yeah. You're Burlington? You're out a little bit more towards the... Berkshires, right?
Yeah.
A little bit more west.
About
20
minutes from New Hampshire,
Yeah, that's a nice area. Yeah, we lived, my dad's job moved us around a few times. We finally settled in New Jersey when I was about eight, but almost nine. But we lived in Wellesley for about 5 years, and it was right after we moved into this home that I began having these very, very vivid nightmares, if I really don't think they were nightmares, honestly, of these squat black entities. With these glowing eyes, and then...
And these pretty much match
five years later, they're showing up on the mountainside in southern Oregon, and I swear there, I was like, those are fucking things, those are the same things that terrorized me as a kid. And it's not, it wasn't just like when I was laying in my, in bed, it was, I mean, I'll have the article link on there, but...
Yeah.
I actually bumped into one of them once in the hallway. Honestly, I know you don't know me, but I'm not a crazy guy. I have a college education. I'm successfully self-employed. I have a good business. I'm married 20 years. I have two kids. You know, I'm not a weird guy.
Right.
But I've had a series of paranormal type of weird experiences in my life, which is that's contributed to this fascination. And here were these things, the same damn things, that showed up on this mountain 35 years later. And I'm like, that's what pissed me off. that's why I approached them, because it's like
you were like that little kid all over again.
And I was like, these bastards are back. And that's why I kind of confronted them. That's when they rushed us.
Yeah.
They charged at us. And, but I've had, you know, and I tell you what, and I'm sure you can attest to the same thing, having a blog about this strange kind of stuff. There's a lot of people, a lot of very normal, not weird, crazy people in the least, that have had these really, really, really bizarre experiences in their life. And more often than not, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but it's generally not a singular incident. It's usually part of a pattern repeats throughout their lives.
Yeah.
And here I thought I was done with this. And you know, the last time I had this happen was when I was in my mid-teens. And here these things show up, you know, I'm almost 50 years old. These things show up. And it has to have some kind of significance. I don't know. And I'm not saying that these things were there because I was there or anything.
No, but there's a part of me that wonders. I was going to joke, you know, here we were blaming Adam for all this time, but clearly now it's I'm learning that it's your fault that this happened.
Well, did they follow me there? Or is this a place that where they are able to manifest themselves?
Right.
And maybe that house that I moved into when I was 4 years old was when I first started seeing these things. Maybe that was a place where they were already there. I don't know. This is all, it's all really weird, and it's all been on my mind quite a bit, but I swear, and I'm a religious man, and I am not a childless guy, but I would swear on a stack of Bibles and my souls and my children. This stuff happened. It really did. It happened. And, Adam and I saw it. Matt Johnson saw it. His kid, Grady, was there, and he saw these things. Doing that last night, and it happened. It happened, and it means something. I don't know what it means, but it means something.
Interesting,
and that's significant, and it shouldn't be dismissed just because people don't like Matt Johnson or because it's too weird and we don't have concrete evidence. You know what? I don't think you can ever get concrete evidence of this sort of thing.
Right. Exactly.
You just can't.
Well, it's worth talking about, like I said, and like Adam was saying, it's worth taking further to see if you can figure out, get more information about it, you know what I'm saying? So, all right, I think we're pretty much at the end here. Is there anything else, Adam? Well, you know, we'll do the what's next for you. John, you got the blog.
Yeah, Paranormalist, can I plug it?
Yeah, plug all, this is the plug part, so go wild.
I was Paranormalist, but everybody would always say Paranormalist, and I just was able to purchase the name Paranormalist. So I was like, screw it, I'll just rebrand it. So I'm redoing the site. I'm going to just post kind of version one of that in the next few days. And I'm gonna write an article about this, too. I'm actually about halfway through. So
nice.
I have an article about all this stuff, but it's paranormalist.com. And, just have some of my weird stories on there and stuff. And
yeah.
I'm going to be contributing to that a lot more regularly going forward.
Nice, nice. Check that out, folks. And Adam, I know your stuff's kind of like either tenuous or sort of all, you know, off the record or whatever, but do you have anything you can tell us about what you're going to be doing next?
Well, I mean, firstly, I mean, what we were talking about with the Brian Sykes stuff, the account can be found in my new book, Man Beast, A Personal Investigation.
Yes.
That's the book that was out this year. And people can find me on my Adam Davis Facebook page or on the Adam Davis Explorer website, so they can follow me what I'm going to be doing. What I'm doing now is researching those areas that we talked about earlier on, but I'm also I had a pretty intense experiences in Canada, which I'll talk to you about next time, and I need to do some back-end scientific analysis of things that resulted from that whole expedition. But that's a story for another time. But I'm always doing something, you know that, Tim.
Absolutely.
Always on the go. But next time it'll be much more focused on the purest Bigfoot research.
There you go. All right. Well, on that note, we'll wrap it up here. Just don't hang up after we're done, guys. We'll just sort of touch base afterwards and make sure we like how everything went down. On that note, I cannot thank you guys enough. I know we're kind of had your arms twisted into doing this. Not by me, folks. I didn't. Adam reached out to me out of the blue and was like, "Hey, I got a story for you." And I looked at my schedule and realized that we hadn't had Adam on yet for the season, so it all kind of worked perfectly. And I really do, Adam, this is like the second exclusive you've given me on the show, and I really do appreciate that. And I don't know what to say about this story. It's pretty remarkable. I'm going to be thinking about it a lot. I haven't really formed an opinion on it, to be honest with you, yet. I gave somebody a lot of shit once because I really hate the expression, but it's like, it does make sense in this instance where it's like, I believe that you believe this happened. Mm. But beyond that, I'm not quite sure exactly what happened yet. And I'm sure you guys are even worse
situation. No, that's no different.
Situation.
That's no different to our position.
Right.
We need to explore what happened.
Right, yeah. Right.
So I would accept that. That's
yeah. And having been in the situation, I'm sure, you know, that can be at times somewhat maddening for you guys because it's like, you guys know that this happened to you.
Hmm.
And I really do appreciate you guys opening up and sharing this and satisfying all the people who've been dying to find out what went down that night, or at least what went down those nights from your perspectives. And like I said, I just really appreciate that you guys, you know, turned to Banal of America to get that story out. So thank you so much, and thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. My pleasure. Our pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. It felt good. Good to unload.
There you go.
Thank you. I'll send you a fee for your psychiatry services.
Oh, the bill's in the mail. Now let me just do my quick plugs here, and then we can chat afterwards. Right. It'll take like a minute. There you go, folks. That was John Carlson and Adam Davies. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I'm really looking forward to hearing the feedback on this one. And Adam and John are still on here, but I'm just doing the plugs for my own stuff. So one last thing, Adam and John, because I'm not as deep into the Bigfoot community as you guys are. You let me know what the feedback is to the show, please. Even if they say I'm an asshole.
I'll tell you.
Yeah. Even if they were like, "Oh, that Manal, he just gave him a pass." It's like I want to know if someone says that. That's fine.
No, you didn't give us a pass. You asked us some searching questions. I'd tell you if I thought you gave us a pass. You know that.
I know. And for the folks who are listening to the program for the very first time, this is Banal of America Audio. I believe this is Adam's 7th or 8th appearance on the program. We've been documenting his work over the years, almost since the very beginning, or at least since he sort of first published his book and started telling the world about these expeditions. And You can head on over to banalofamerica.com to get into our deep, vast archive. We've got over 200 episodes, maybe up to 250 at this point. So, and it is all absolutely free. So if you're interested in the Bigfoot, there's tons of shows there on Bigfoot. There's tons of shows on all different sorts of topics. And as I said, it's absolutely free. We do that via donations from the Banal of America listeners. So what you just heard was a 2.5-hour long-distance phone call to England and New Jersey, all tied into one phone call that will be coming to me in bill form sometime in the next month. So if you could help us out and help us pay for these expansive conversations that come at you absolutely free, it would be greatly appreciated. You can do that by heading on over to banalofamerica.com and clicking the PayPal button. And if you don't trust the internet and you want to make a snail mail donation, you can do so via the P.O. box that's listed at the website as well. Also should mention the Banal of America Facebook page. That's where you can keep up with all the latest from Banal of America, the in-house notes. That's the kind of stuff you'll find there, as well as news tips on stuff that's happening in the news that connects to previous episodes. Try to post those every once in a while. And you can find that by just heading over to Facebook and punching in banalofamerica.com. And I know, folks, that this has been a sparse couple of months here. It's been a bit of a lull here as we ended the summer and entered the autumn. We've been kind of low on episodes. It's a bit of an odd situation. A lot of stuff going on in my life, a lot of work. But I'm happy to report, if you're a fan of Banal of America, this is the week for you. Because not only have you just finished listening to a 2.5-hour conversation with Adam Davies and John Carlson, but we'll be doing another episode this Sunday night, a historic episode in a lot of ways. Greg Bishop and I have talked about this in the past. We finally decided to do it. A Banal of America Audio Radio Mysterioso simulcast. And that's going to be Sunday night. What is it? Today's the 1st. Tomorrow's the 2nd. October 4th at 11 p.m. at banalofamerica.com. All the information is going to be up at BOA later this weekend. That is going to be, as I said, a 2-hour simulcast, Radio Mysterioso and Banal of America on at the same time. Me and Greg talking about all kinds of stuff. And I can't say too much more about it right now, but Greg and I are working on something very, very big, and we hopefully can announce it on Sunday. We've got a really, really big announcement coming very soon, we hope, unless this whole plan falls apart. But it looks like it's about 90% a go at this point, and if we can cross the T's and dot the I's over the next couple of days, we'll have a major, major announcement on the simulcast. Radio Mysterioso, Banal of America, that's coming at you October 4th, Sunday at 11 p.m. And then, as I said, if you're a fan of Banal of America, this is absolutely the week for you, because not only are we doing the simulcast on Sunday, but then we're going to have a live episode next Thursday night at 9 p.m., so chances are you're getting 3 Banal of America episodes in 1 week. Our guest is going to be James A. Willis. He wrote a book about haunted locations in Ohio, and took a very unique tactic towards examining these haunted locations. So we're going to get into all that, kind of a little October spookiness for you here on Banal of America. So 3 shows over the course of 1 week. That's already more shows than we put out in September and October. So I think it's safe to say that our little downtime as we wrapped up the summer is behind us, and hopefully we'll have a nice flow of programs for you over the course of the month. 3 shows this week. Once again, big thanks to Adam Davies and John Carlson for coming on the show. Stick around for Banal of America Radio Mysterioso simulcast Sunday night at 11. And, of course, next Thursday night, James A. Willis talking about the haunted locations of Ohio live at 9 p.m. And with all that said, thank you so much for listening, folks. Thank you to the hardcore BOA audio listeners who've spent a long time, just as I have, with Adam, and consider him a dear friend of the program. I'm sure you're just as fascinated as I am by the latest twist in his adventures, and I've really, really enjoyed it. So thank you to the hardcore listeners. Thank you to the newcomers. And, of course, thank you all for your support of this program. You are the fuel that drives the BOA mothership. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.